Hello, and welcome to the Newark City Schools podcast. My name is Seth Roy, and I'm the Community Outreach Coordinator for the district. On this fourth episode, I speak with Walter Glashinsky, an intervention specialist at Newark High School, who runs the Smiling with Hope Bakery, a full-service, licensed bakery run by Glashinsky and his special needs students. The students make various baked goods, including pizza, breads, bagels, pie, brownies, and more. The bakery has recently been featured on SeriousEats.com and will be featured in the May issue of PMQ Pizza Magazine, the pizza industry's leading trade magazine. The program will also be featured on 10TV next week. Walter also has an interesting background, having lived all across the country and overseas as a traveling musician and teacher before making his way to Newark. Before I get to that, I just have a couple of news items to share. If you're interested in coaching youth football in Newark, there will be a mandatory meeting from 6 to 8 p.m. on June 19th in the Newark High School Commons with food and beverage provided. Congratulations to the Newark High School Air Force Junior ROTC Air Rifle Team, which won the Alconbury High School Air Rifle Invitational in England recently against teams from Germany and England. The Invitational was a postal match, meaning they weren't there in person but sent their scores in by mail. Finally, we would like to thank One World Football and Denison University graduate Emily Hopsian for the donation of brand new soccer balls to many of our schools. Emily volunteered in the district while she was at Denison and found another way to give back to the district. Now we will hear from Walter Glashinsky. Okay, I'm here with Walter Glashinsky. Just ask you to introduce yourself and say your position here at the high school.
Okay, my name's Walter Glashinsky, and I'm an intervention specialist, special ed teacher at Newark High School, and I've created the Smiling with Hope Bakery program.
Okay, and of course we're here to talk about the Smiling with Hope Bakery. How long have you been at Newark High School?
This year will be 7 years.
7 years. And describe what the Smiling with Hope Bakery is, and it's kind of your mission statement and your goal with Smiling with Hope.
Okay. Well, it started about 25 years ago in Austin, Texas, and when I was a teaching assistant in a special ed room, and I realized my students, they would never compete in a competitive job that was academically based. So I was in an old home ec room, and the teacher really wasn't concerned with whatever went on. So we started making things, food, and selling it. And then from there, I took it to Sonoma County, California for 11 years. I did it there, again, the same type of situation in an old home ec room. Then I came here to Newark 7 years ago and ended up again in an old home ec room. And then when they built a new high school, they agreed to turn my room into a commercial space. So we're up to code, so we're licensed in with the state of Ohio, Department of Agriculture, and we're a licensed bakery. And my goal with the Smiling with Hope Bakery is to impart the skills on my students that will lead to them having a happy, fruitful life of employment, leisure, hope, just like all of us hope to find as we move on through the process of life.
Right. In the bakery, of course, I would say one of my favorite things is the pizza and the brownies. What other items do your students make in the bakery?
Okay. Well, to back up a little, the bakery, my intention when we started here was to have a traditional bakery where you would walk in and see 20, 30 items, cakes, and but the problem was nobody came. And the people that did come, we ended up selling one item and having 45 items left over of each item. So I realized quick that that wasn't going to work, at least not in the short run, because we get no funding for this. I have to sustain the whole program through our profits. So then I went out to Newark Schools, Granville Schools, and different agencies and Denison University, and I secured contracts with them for big numbers of things like a healthy chocolate chip cookie I developed that meets the wellness laws. So we sell them to Granville and Newark thousands a week. And then we do bagels for Granville, sell 400 or 500 bagels a week to them. And then we do bagels for Denison, again, another 500 bagels. And their bagels are with 100% organic wheat flour that are from the Amish. So that's an interesting journey, ordering flour and with people that don't use a phone or an internet, and, you know, and they stone grind it with their horses. And yeah, so it's been mainly those type of things that sustain us. And then we've kind of boiled it down to what sells. Our cookies sell, our pizzas sell. And then if I get an order for something, I'll make it, but it has to be a big enough order to make it worth our while. Sometimes I'll have an older person from the community call, and they're all excited there's a bakery in Newark again, you know, and they want one bagel, poppy seed, they want one chocolate chip cookie, they want one bear claw, and I'm like, I can't do that, unfortunately. So we do get orders sometimes of people, like when Judge Baldwin was sworn in, we catered that, and we made hundreds of danishes and cookies and brownies for that. Mm-hmm. But the little walk in and point to each little item, bakery, it didn't work. It's too hard to get in the school. It's just not, it's locked.
Right.
Only open school days. It just doesn't work in people's mind that you could have a bakery in a high school.
Selling the product is what allows you to be able to teach the kids how to do specific jobs. What sorts of jobs are the students actually performing in the bakery?
Well, they're doing everything that would be needed in a working bakery or a working business. All the functional academics that are needed, time, measurement, money, ordering, inventory, delivery, navigation of the community, estimating. You know, I try to push them into all the fields that they can strive to. They clean the place up. They do the laundry. We do every aspect of a working bakery, and the higher end skills, you know, I do. You know, they count the money, and I have to count it with them. But I have to balance the books with the school treasurer, and they've been wonderful with helping me with this, because this is something I didn't know anything about. And it turns out now where I think we're rival, you know, we're coming up on or surpassing like the athletics in money. So we have to really make sure everything balances, and it's all new territory to me. And I just like to say thank you to the treasurer and his department for all the help they've given me.
Yep. As the program has gotten a bit bigger, especially the last couple of years, as we've gotten into the new high school, the bakery has gotten some more recognition and gotten more recognized sort of outside the school. It's been, you know, a number of stories have been written in the Newark Advocate. I know 10TV was working on doing something right now, and you've also gotten attention from the Department of Development Services as a vocational program, and also from some pizza industry publications for the quality of pizza. So there's a lot of different things going on in terms of how the program's being recognized. What, for you as sort of the person behind the program and pushing the students and pushing the program forward, what does it mean for you to get some of this attention?
Oh, it's wonderful. My students are actually, probably for the first time in their life, feeling needed. Mm-hmm. You know, we don't make our stuff and throw it in the garbage can at the end of the day. People come in, they're happy. We had the news anchor from Channel 10, Ms. Hartman, she was in for 3 hours on Monday filming us with her crew. And we're going to be in the studio at the end of the month at the 6 o'clock news with her. And the more publicity we can get, the more people in the public are going to go, hopefully, my dream would be, wow, people with disabilities can do a lot more than we ever thought possible. And I hope it also influences educators and lawmakers into seeing that we can't push people with disabilities that limit their intellectual functioning beyond that. The medical science has not figured out how to fix that. So we can prepare them for things that they can be successful at. We can prepare them for entry-level jobs that they will be as excited about as if you own the place. You know, they love doing their jobs, and they're great at it, and they will be a lifetime employee.
And you have one student who's currently working in the Denison
Well, I have two
kitchen.
Students at Denison Kitchen.
Okay.
And their culinary skills are so high that they're paid more than the entry-level wage that Bon Appetit starts at. Oh. And they're working between 20 and over spring break, 40 hours a week. They're making $250, $400 a week. And I have another one who works on the school lunch truck. That's the truck that delivers the lunches to all the different schools. He works for minimum wage. So historically, none of these students have ever worked while they're in school. And most, when they get out of school, have never found competitive employment without support. Mm-hmm. My students at Denison have no support. They don't have a special needs person from Department of Developmental Disability with them as a job coach. I'm not there. They're on their own. They fit in with everybody else, which is unheard of.
Yeah. This month, you're going to be featured in PMQ Magazine, which is a pizza industry.
Yeah, we're going to be in the PMQ Pizza Magazine, which is the pizza industry magazine. It's a hardcover magazine. It's not a virtual. They have it on the internet as well. But it goes to everyone in the pizza business, from people that make cheese to pizzerias to anybody involved in the pizza industry gets this magazine. And we're going to be featured in that in the May issue. We had another article on SeriousEats.com written by Adam Kuban, who is regarded as one of the best pizza makers in New York City. He's a partner in Pauly G's in Brooklyn, which is probably one of the hippest pizzerias in New York right now. And he did a beautiful story on us. We've had the Advocate. We've had the Columbus paper. We've had you doing things. We've had the Channel 10 coming up. Yeah, the governor is sending somebody here next week to observe our program and talk to me about, you know, the vocational component and how did I develop this. And so it's very exciting.
Yeah. A little bit of your background and also some of the pizza and why pizza is such a big part of this. You are from the New York City area.
Yes.
From Newark, New Jersey.
I grew up in two towns that border Newark, New Jersey. I was literally three blocks from Newark, New Jersey my whole life.
Okay.
In two different towns. And my mother is from Italy. And the food culture back there is just, it's cuckoo. I mean, people get in fights over it. You know, it's intense, to put it mildly. And I was fortunate enough to be around my mother and her family from Italy, who were masters of all angles of cooking and baking. And then to be in this culture, I was drawn to it. So I learned a lot there. And then I was a musician most of my life before I started teaching. So when I needed money and my music wasn't paying, I could always find jobs working in bakeries, pizzerias, instead of working out in the hot sun, digging a ditch or chopping a tree down or something. And I could work after the music gig was over. I could go in there at 3 in the morning and work till 1 in the afternoon. And I worked in some great bakeries in Austin, Texas, that were just phenomenal. And I just increased my dough experience. And then I worked with the head chef at Aqua, which is the premier restaurant in San Francisco, Laurent, who is regarded as one of France's top chefs. And I was involved with him with Faux Gras. They That's the national dish of it's fattened up duck liver, and it's a pate that they make out of it. And then the byproduct of the duck was the breasts, and they would grind. I would smoke the duck breasts for Laurent. Then we would grind them up in the burgers, and they were shipping them all over the country to gourmet restaurants, duck burgers. So, and then down in Texas, I hung around all the barbecues down there, and I picked up stuff there. I've always been driven by food. I lived in Brussels for 2.5 years, Belgium, and I studied the food there, all the corner bread makers and food people. I'd get to know them and hang out, and my mother taught me, my grandmother, my grandfather. I've just been around this my whole life, and now I'm able to use it as a tool here with this Smiling with Hope bakery program.
Right. So what, talked a little bit about, you've lived all over the country, you've lived in another country for a brief time. What drew you to Newark?
My music I call Sponto Beat. I spontaneously make up my words and music as I go along. I have no idea what I'm going to sing. I have no idea what I'm going to play. Pictures, stories come to me like movies in my head, and I go into them, and it comes out. And I've been doing this for over 50 years, and my life has always been spontaneous. I was in the Bay Area. I was wanting to move out of there. It was just so expensive to live, and we had to live in a very marginal neighborhood, and and the educational system was falling apart, the infrastructure of the state, it was a stressful place to be in this beautiful weather. And I ran into a musician friend of mine. He was on tour, and he told me he was from Granville, Ohio. He told me all about Granville, and he told me about Newark, and I thought, he said, it's got everything you want except the weather. And I said, well, thanks, and we subscribed to the Newark Advocate and the Granville paper for about 6 months, and we kind of felt it out, and we sold our house and loaded up. I had a 40-foot bus from when I was doing music. We loaded up into the bus, and we just drove out here, and I went down to Newark City Schools and made an appointment with Jean Brown, and I presented this program to her. And she said, this sounds like a great program, and she got with it right from day one, and just been kind of putting it together ever since. But I didn't know anybody. I have no family here, no friends. How to use MapQuest to get to work. But I've lived my whole life this way, so this is nothing new.
Right.
I walk blindly, follow my heart.
And going back to earlier, when you first got your job here 7 years ago, and at that time the construction on the high school hadn't started yet, but they knew it was coming, and you were in a home ec room that had a couple small ovens.
Yeah, we had three ovens, sinks, and it was all falling apart, and it was hot.
And you were, back then, were you concentrating on the dog biscuits? Or?
Yeah, we were doing the dog biscuits. Legally, you don't have to have a commercial space. You can make dog biscuits anywhere. There's no regulation on dog biscuits. You just have to buy the license from the Department of Agriculture and get your label right. So that started us going. And then we made pizzas in the ovens, the home ovens, which was an exercise in frustration for me, but it still was better pizza than most people were used to. Mm-hmm. And we made our baked goods and sold them and some breads. And that was sort of the incubator,
you know, right,
to get things going. And then when the new construction came through, Jesse Truitt at the time was a big believer in our program, and Keith Richards was too. So it kind of got through the meetings of planning our room space with the architects. I couldn't believe it when they were drawing it out. They said, okay, your hood vent will be here, your three sink compartment. I was like, I think I'm dreaming. And then it got built. It's just a miracle.
And you actually, in your classroom, it's a kitchen, you have pizza ovens that used to be at another pizza place here in town?
Yeah, I bought those ovens. See, the ovens I use are from the 1970s, and they are still regarded as the holy grail of pizza ovens back in the New York City area. Here, people have gone to the conveyor pizza oven more, so they just don't spit out the volume, and they take a lot of skill to run, and so they've fallen out of vogue in the outside of the New York City area. So I found these ovens for a song, and I bought them because wherever I go, those ovens are going with me. They're like they're the holy grail. I can't find them back home. Nobody will sell them. And they still make all the parts for them, and they're very easy to work on. There's no electronics. But those deck ovens, gas deck ovens, are they cook the best pizza. When you get it all together right, throw it in that oven, you're going to come out with a really good pizza.
If someone listening to this was interested in ordering a pizza or a number of pizzas or something, they just call the high school?
Right. They call the high school because we don't have a direct line. And then they would ask for the bakery, and it transfers to us. Or they could email me. And we ask that people do it at least a day in advance because we sell out every day. Our pizzas, we make the dough, and then we put it in the refrigerator for 2 to 5 days. And that develops flavor. And we just, in fact, I just got done with some of my students. We buy our oregano from Sicily, Italy. It's on the stalk. They just cut it off at ground level and bunch it up. So we were, you know, grinding up our oregano from Sicily. And we import Parmigiano Reggiano and Grana Padano cheeses from Italy, which sell for $23 a pound. We use crushed tomatoes in our sauce with fresh garlic with this oregano from Sicily. We use whole milk mozzarella cheese. It's a pizza that back in, well, in even in Columbus, I could get $20 for our cheese pizza. And here we sell it for $9. And the pepperoni is $10. And they're 18-inch. And they're hand-tossed. And they're cooked right on the stone. There's no pizza pans. They cook right on. You have to put dough right on a stone to create the crust. Pans, screens, they don't, it doesn't work.
And, of course, that's the high school phone number, 670-7400, and call any time when school's in session. I think that's about all I had. Do you have anything else?
I just want to thank everyone in Newark City Schools for all the support, from Mr. Ute, Mr. Fullen, on down to the custodians. You know, I want to thank the board. I want to thank the community. I want to thank you. It's just been a miracle to pull this off, and it's the common sense thing to do. I mean, you wouldn't train me to run in the Olympics. I never was fast enough to begin with, and I'm too old. But you could train me for things that I can do involving running. I can jog. So it's important that we train these students that will never pass the OGT, will never go on to higher learning because of their cognitive limitations, to keep giving them academics. There's no point to it. There's no jobs out there. I continue to ask, and I'll ask here too, if someone can show me an academic-based job for students that operate in the first to third or fourth grade level academically and are severely deficient in social skills and self-help skills, you show me where those jobs are, and I'd throw the bakery in the garbage. But conversely, with this program, and it doesn't even have to be a bakery, it can be replicated anywhere. Whatever the teacher's passion is, if it's horticulture, they could create a greenhouse and sell. If it's knitting, they could make things. If it's woodwork, they could create things. It doesn't have to be baking. Sometimes people ask me, well, all you do is training to work in a bakery. I'm saying, no, they're learning skills. My students come into my room as freshmen or even as upperclassmen that haven't been in it before. They don't know how to wash their hands. They don't know how to stay on their feet for more than 20 minutes. Their feet hurt. They don't want to work. They don't like the person next to them. They don't want to work with them. And I say, you know what? On a real job, that's too bad. You have to learn to work with people you like and you don't like. And through the time with me, they're on their feet for 7 hours working. And then as they build their skills, then I can connect them to jobs in the community. And I've created these, I haven't created, these pathways have evolved naturally because we sell products. Mm-hmm. When we sell products at Denison University, they like our products. So I say, I have a student that would be good here. Well, let's give them a shot. Granville Schools, they are, they've been full, but once there's an opening, they're going to give one of my students a shot. Huh. We you know, the center, the Licking County Aging Program, Marty Hart's over there. I've worked with her, and in fact, I'm going to call her up this summer to see if there's any openings for students to work on the Meals on Wheels assembly line. Mm-hmm. And they have the skills in place to do entry-level work, repetitive tasks. They've learned to stop when they don't know what they're doing. They've learned to not talk while they work. They've learned how to come in looking appropriately, well-groomed, clean clothes. These simple things will keep you from getting a job, mm-hmm. right off the bat. And they come into me knowing none of these skills, none. They'll take a rag, and they'll use that rag for 33 years. They don't know when it gets dirty. They don't know how to wash a dish. They don't know how to run a washing machine. They don't know how to tie an apron. They don't know how to put a hairnet on. They don't know how to put gloves on. These are things that you and I take for granted that these students do not know how to do. And without these skills, how could they ever find a job? Mm-hmm. So with this program, they're learning all the functional skills that are needed that we use in our life to survive. That because abstractly, they don't transfer them. We could work on a unit on them working in a bakery, and they can get an A in it. Take them to a real bakery, they don't know where to start. They don't transfer skills like we do. They have to be taught skills in the context they're going to be used. So you teach them about work in a work environment, then they can carry it over to another work environment. Mm-hmm. Teach them about work in a classroom environment with paper and pencil and simulated role-playing, it doesn't work. So this is just something that works. To me, it's common sense. I mean, why would you do anything else? And the success out of 7 students, 3 are working. And I think one of my students probably makes more than any student at Newark High School. Mm-hmm. Over spring break, she made over $400 working at Bon Appetit. So the proof's in the pudding, as my mother said, you know? Yeah, and it feels exciting. I don't get tired when I come to work. I don't feel like I'm doing exercises in frustration. My students regularly tell me when they were in academic classes, their head hurt all the time and they were sad. And now the day goes so fast, they continually tell me, Mr. G, it's almost time to go home. I think I just got here. I said, yeah, when you're happy and inspired, time goes fast. That's why we call it the Smiling with Hope Bakery, because when you're smiling, you have hope, and when you're not, you don't. And there's too many kids in special education that aren't smiling. And this little program here, the more publicity we can get, and I really work hard on getting as much media exposure as we can, because this is going to open eyes, and it's going to make it expand. It's going to bring more customers, which means I can include more special needs students. Mm-hmm. But as a real business operates, it's an ebb and flow. When you have demand for your product, you have employees. When the demand goes down, employees get laid off. So I need to have work, or it's just a nice kitchen that you can't do anything in. Mm-hmm. Because I don't get any money from the district to do exercises in learning how to get ready for life after school and work. We have to pay our way. We pay for our laundry soap, our uniforms, our hats, our aprons, all our equipment, maintenance on equipment, gas for our van, which the Licking County Foundation gave us a van through a grant. Thank you very much. And the Energy Co-op gave us a freezer through a grant. Janet Schultz helped me with that. Thank you very much. So we're real business. We sink or swim, which is a good thing. The district pays our utilities, you know, the custodians clean the floor because our floor is a special new material that a mop won't work. They had to buy, they have to have a special scrubbing machine, and we're not able to run it. So, but other than that, we're totally self-sufficient. Our oven broke last week, $450. We paid it. So we're not taking anything out of the district. We're just giving. Mm-hmm. And I, and in today's financial struggle of schools, this is a win-win. I mean, if I was a carpenter doing this program, I would say, let us build the new shed for the custodians' equipment. Or let us go into some homes in Newark and rehab them, you know. And then the kids learn measurement. They learn a skill. And as you do that, materials are delivered. So when the materials are delivered, you get to know the driver. You get to know the people that own that company. Well, guess what? They need somebody. Well, I got a guy right here, student. You plug him right in. So it's a one-man show, not because of me, just because of the program. It naturally creates these pathways. And we're always trying to create pathways in the school for our students to go on to higher education or future jobs. Mm-hmm. And this type of program naturally creates them. You don't have to go out and hustle them. You don't have to write a book. You don't have to read a book. You just start a business, and everything that you need to do automatically comes front and center. And you either sink or you swim. So it's a great thing. And it's a beautiful thing, too, because in the schools, we don't think about making money. We think about how much money we have to spend this year. How much taxpayers' money do we have to spend? And where can we put it? Our program makes us think about life after school. How are we going to make money? How much do we make? What can we afford to stay open? Can we afford to maintain and expand and replace things? All this comes into play because the kids will say, oh, we made $300 today. I'll say, yeah, but look at our GFS bill. The delivery truck this week was $750. So we have to – they learn that money in hand doesn't mean money in hand. Mm-hmm. It means money in hand minus bills in the other hand. And at the end of the day, the money in hand has to be more than the bills in hand or you're out of business. Mm-hmm. You're on the street. So they're learning that money is hard to earn and easy to spend. And finding work is possible, which is something that they didn't really know before. A lot of them thought they were going to be police officers and lawyers and superstar athletes and rock stars. And they never played the sport. They never sang a song. They can't read a third grade textbook. These things aren't real. So I work on gently letting them know that and showing them what they can do, that there is hope for them. And it talks about their future, where will they go after school is over, what is the reality for them. In fact, one of my students the other day asked me, Mr. G, if you had a disability like me, what would you be doing with your life right now? And that really... That touched me deep. And I told the student, I said, you know, I'd be doing exactly what you're doing. You're learning these skills. And it got him to the point now where you're going to work at a summer work program. He's going to be paid for 6 weeks this summer to work. That's another student that will be working. Uh-huh. And you're doing everything right. So just to be able to have a conversation like that, I don't think would occur if I was sitting in an academic setting with them. And they were frustrated all the time with what they were doing. And they're going to have caseworkers in their life to manage their money, to help them with purchase decisions. Their future will consist of living with parents until the parents die or they tire of each other. And then there's group home living and semi-independent living. And all these things we discuss. So that way they have an idea of what's going to come for their future. And believe it or not, not many people are talking about that to these kids. And this all comes out of our running a business, mm-hmm. believe it or not. But yeah, I can go on and on. It's just been people have asked me to write books about curriculum for running a business like this. I said, you know what? The book would cost $20, and it would say, jump into the real world. That's the book. You want to pay me $20 for that? No, I just do it. There's the curriculum's a waste of time with that. A book. Create a real business, and it automatically opens up everything that is needed to survive on this earth. Simple.
Yeah.
Yeah. No simulation. Real. And I don't know why more people aren't doing it. I have had some teachers express interest around the state and country about it, and they've run into dead ends or whatever. Or it hasn't happened. My wish would be more of these kind of endeavors would happen where these kids learn and they're self-sustaining.
Mm-hmm.
They don't cost the district a dime. We get good press for the district, and that's beautiful. It doesn't cost them anything. We pay our own way.
Thank you very much for your time.
Yes, Ed, thank you.
Thank you to Walter Klischinski for coming on the podcast this time. This is the end of the fourth episode of the Newark City Schools podcast. I will be back next week with interviews with a number of students who are involved in the Newark High School Community Cleanup Day that is actually this Friday, April 25th. Thank you for listening. Have a great day. It's a great time to be a cat.